Yo, what's up? A lot to talk about today. It's Monday night, just minutes after game five of the NBA Finals. Pretty great game. Oklahoma City takes it 120 to 109 to go 3-2. One game away from winning the chip and completing a pretty epic season by all statistical measures. Real recap here, how we got here. Indiana stole game one. Oklahoma City should have won that one. And then Oklahoma came back and pummeled them in game two. Then we have a repeat of game one, except Indiana. Actually, Indiana won game three as well, right? Same magic, except they kind of dominated. And then game four, Indiana controlled the game as well, but it was a repeat of game one. And Oklahoma City came back in the final seconds and stole that game away. So both teams won a game that they should have won. Both teams stole a game that they should have won. So it should definitely be 2-2, tied up, going to game five tonight. And it was a fun game, really fun game. Tyrese Haliburton had some issues throughout the whole day, got hurt in the first half, had some leg issues, but everyone else came up big time, TJ McConnell especially in the third quarter. I think he was like, what, 3 for 5 coming in there, had some clutch buckets in the first half, and then went on a run, kept them in play. Every time you felt like OKC was about to break away, these pesky Pacers, man, they just don't go away. They're like, I don't know, whatever pesky pet, you know, mosquito, whatever, just doesn't want to go away. They are keeping around. What was crazy is they got it down to 2 points, 95 to 93. I can't remember who hit the 3-pointer, but I'm like, oh shit, we might be seeing this again. You know, Indiana feels like they could steal this championship away. And then Oklahoma City responded with 5 points. They were up 100 to 95. And then Pacers scored another basket. And then OKC scores another 10 points or so. And then to kind of give credit where credit's due, man, the tag team of SGA as well as Jalen Williams, man, scoring 40 points combined. They were 71 points. They just dominated. He had some really clutch 3-pointers. And some of the tough layups and like fallaways that he made as the game went on, really impressive. Kind of like definitely a career making game for all these guys on the OKC side. Reactions, guys, what'd you guys think?
Yeah, Rome, I mean, you touched on it, 95-93. That 3-pointer you're talking about came by your guy, J-Dub, Jalen Williams, and then he gets the they get a steal and a slam dunk. They go up 100-93, up 7 points. Indiana just never kind of regrouped from there. They had the momentum. TJ McCollough, like you mentioned, in the third quarter, balling out. He got him back in the game.
He was great.
I mean, as bad as Indiana was playing, they just always, like you said, they don't go away. Like, they're down 15, and then you look up, like, 2.5 minutes later, they're back 7. It's like, okay, they got him right where they want him. Fourth quarter, started the quarter down, I believe, 8. And then immediately Siakam gets a 3, they get a steal, they get another bucket, and you're like, oh, it's 95-93, get back in it. And then an offensive rebound, Jalen Williams hits the 3, they get the turnover, they go back up 7, and the Thunder never looks back from there. Like you said, I mean, both teams have given away game. I think OKC should have won game 1, Indiana rallied. Game 4, Indiana was balling out, looked like they were going to go up 3-1, controlling that game for about 42 to 44 minutes.
They should have won.
And then SGA just took over, MVP, got it done. They got the lead, and then they just never gave it back. That was a clutch win. We're standing here 3-2, game 6, Thursday night in Indiana. Looks like it's going possibly 7. I mean, it's not going to be easy for OKC to win. It's going to be tough. But I think if you're Indiana, you're happy where you're at. I mean, you know, for me, Indiana, it's real comes down to simple things. Don't turn the ball over. They got beat 22-11 on turnovers. If they don't turn the ball over, Indiana wins. The problem is OKC is a great team at turning you over, speeding you up, forcing all these mistakes. If Indiana can limit those mistakes, they win the game. They got outscored 32-9 points off turnovers. That was the difference. Everything else pretty much even. But yeah, controlling the ball, not turning it over, that's going to be key for Indiana. If they get beat in the turnover battle like this again, they're not going to win another game in the series. It'll be difficult, too.
22 turnovers to 11. That is crazy. And they still only lost by 11. Like, it was a moderately close 11 when you look at the whole grand scheme of things. Jason, you're about to say something?
Yeah, I mean, you guys already hit on it. I think when you looked at the games that the Pacers maybe let slip away, or what they had to do to overcome, was hit an insane amount of threes. I think that was game one where they've like significantly lost the turnover battle or whatever it was. But yeah, I think 23-11 Pacers turnovers in this game, it's all the difference. And I don't think the Pacers just have that, you know, type of margin to play with versus a team that I think everyone says is probably a little more talented. But at the same time, you look at the game. Was it the game three win that we reviewed for the Pacers when we talked about all the bench points and stuff that they got? You know, if they're not going to be able to get as many bench points, even though McConnell had a good game, but a couple of those other guys that really stepped up big off the bench in game three that put the Pacers above didn't get as much contribution in this game. You know, it's kind of leaning. I would say everything that come into the series right now is leaning exactly where we thought. Aaron, you said, did you say Pacers in seven, or you were saying Thunder in seven? I can't remember.
Thunder in seven.
Thunder and seven. So, I mean, it's pretty much kind of played out the way we talked about. Aaron, I think Roman and I both had Oklahoma City in six. So I guess it's going to be, what's that home court advantage? I think Indiana, you know, and Oklahoma City have both had unique home courts in this series. Indiana definitely had it going on in game three when we kind of reviewed the pot on that game. But the turnover is what Aaron's talking about. I think will be the biggest piece there for the game six back in Indiana.
Yeah, I mean, you talk bench points. I mean, third quarter, Indiana's bench outscored OKC 20-0. And they still outscored them on the bench. I'm looking at the number right now, 43-27. So Indiana's controlling the bench. But, you know, the starting five, turning the ball over, rebounds, assists, everything pretty much the same. We talked about it on game one. Jason touched on it. You know, 25 turnovers, I think, to 12. But the points off turnovers, it was like only like 10-7. It wasn't a big discrepancy. Tonight, 32-9. It's one thing to turn the ball over. It's another thing in those lead to points. When those lead to points, you start feeling good about yourself. And then Jalen Williams balled out. Rome, you called him out after game three. Kind of looked like he was sped up. Wasn't himself. These last two games, he's responded big. And that's why OKC's been able to get back in this series and take the lead.
Yeah, it was pretty epic. Real quick, man, like going back to the last game where Indiana was kind of controlling, I was just thinking, I'm like, man, we might actually see it happen. Like an underdog team, if you can call Indiana an underdog team, they've dominated every series that they played in. It felt like they might go up 3-1 and clinch this like in five or six. Like we were seconds away, just like the way Sinner was about to sink Alcaraz, and he was just a point away from winning that championship in the Paris Open or whatever it is. Then OKC comes back up and steals it and ties it up. Pretty crazy. And then today, second quarter, they were up like, 15, 17 points at one point. And
I think
then,
they got to 18 or 19, yeah.
And then even the broadcast, you know, Richard Jefferson and Dolores, like they're just saying like, man, like OKC, they should keep on pushing because you're not safe. You don't want to be up like 8, 10 points at the halftime. You want to be up by 20. If not more, and they just couldn't hit the pedal a little bit more. And Indiana, man, just scrapped on through. I think SJ was on the bench and he finally came back in like the final minute or so. Same thing with Halliburton, and they were able to weather down the storm a little bit and go up a little bit. But Indiana, man, just, I got to give it to them. Like when things are not clicking, things are not working, they find other ways to win. They're like hustles. It was just all hustling plays and they were winning it. And they got close to turning this game around again. It was that close.
Well, yeah. Indiana believes, and they've seen it. I mean, they're playing the games. You can watch it on film. They believe if they stay physical and grind you out, that you're going to wear under the pressure. And OKC, they've gotten under their skin. They've kind of broken them down a little bit. But I think OKC did a couple good things. I didn't get at the start of the series when they went to the small lineup and benched Hartenstein. They started him game four. They started him game five. Now, all of a sudden, instead of, like we talked about, getting beat on the rebounds, they're even the last two games. So now they're even on the rebound battle, which can help. That was Indiana was able to kind of gain possessions doing that and offsetting the turnovers. So now they've got that going for them. And now they're also SGA. They're getting him minutes in between resting in the third quarter and fourth quarter instead of letting him play a whole quarter. He's looked a little more fresher. They've had Jalen Williams bringing the ball up the court, being the full-time point guard, kind of to relieve that pressure a little bit. Those are two subtle things that have worked for them. But yeah, Rome, like you said, Indiana knows, hey, we're down 19, but we can come back. And they've kind of had that feeling throughout these playoffs. That's not going to deter them, even down 3-2. Haliburton, he's got this, you know, leg injury. We'll find out more about that. Did not have a great game, but they've got weapons and they got guys that can come off the bench and give them productive minutes. And it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough to put them away there in game six in Indiana. It's going to be rocking. The crowd's going to fuel them. And, you know, I said this would probably be one of the best finals we've had in a while. I believe it is, whether or not OKC finishes them in six. But yeah, we've got an entertaining finals of the two best teams right now in the league.
Yeah, so far about this one, man, this is definitely an emergence of Jalen Williams. He's looking like a superstar. This is only, what, his third year in the league, putting up 40 in the finals. I think he's scored like 25 points in like now three straight games or something like that. He's increased his production throughout the finals. SGA, 30 points every single game. Has the most, I think, like the third most points in his first four or five games ever in finals history. These guys are the second youngest ever to make it to the finals, and kind of crazy how they're kind of putting it all together. We talked about it earlier, like months ago. This team, OKC, has not had a lot of close games throughout the season because they're blowing teams out. So they've had to figure all that out first against the Mavs and now against the Pacers. It's kind of cool seeing them figure it out. I thought the game plan between Williams and SGA was really nice today. They were really working off each other. The mid-range game that SGA pulled off today, same thing with Williams and just driving to the basket, pulling away, fade away some like really tough, you know, floaters off the glass, really beautiful stuff, man. It's just really good basketball. At times, I thought this game was like a little weird, you know, it was like a little sloppy. I think we went like a couple 3 or 4 minute stretches, like not too much baskets. But other than that, though, it was pretty exciting seeing the Thunder close it out on this one.
Aaron, curious of your thoughts, is and Rome a little bit yours too, because we've talked a lot throughout the playoffs about, you know, guys maybe taking that step. Rome, you were talking about face of the league for Anthony Edwards. Tyrese Haliburton through the Eastern Conference portion of this playoffs really, really kind of make a name for himself. There's been moments there. But if I'm just being box score guy right now,
okay,
and I'm looking at these past couple games,
it's not a good box score.
I'm saying tonight Haliburton 0-for-6 from the floor, 4 points. His 4 points are off three free throws. Game four, 18 points. You know, but you know Siakam's kind of carrying him in that game, and then game. You know, early in the series when they won, even the game one only had 14 points. So like when you compare on the other side of the court to SGA, who, you know, tonight in game five, you know, puts up 40 points or 31 points and Jalen Williams put up 40 points. Like we've had some, you know, singular moments that are going to be, you know, the choke sign and everything he's kind of done throughout the playoffs. But where's the takeover game that potentially you need from Haliburton down the stretch? That is that going to be the thing to put it over? Because basketball, I think more than any other sport, this is where your stars really come to play and really kind of just take over games in the biggest moments. And I don't know if we've seen that from Tyrese right so far in these finals.
Tyrese is a different kind of player. He's more like a look to make the right play, pass, find other guys' grooves. If anything, that's just something he's going to have to grow into, being like a little more aggressive. So he's not always going to stuff the stat sheet. But what's interesting, though, is like I think the credit here is with the defense on the Thunders stuffing Haliburton a little bit because they've definitely stopped his production. But if he produced just a little bit today, this might be a different ending. So like they were close once again, just he didn't have the juice and they couldn't make enough plays down the stretch. But I think Haliburton is just a different kind of star. Not so much he's going to get you 30, 40 points. He can, and he has clutch baskets. We've seen it throughout the playoffs, but different kind of star.
Haliburton's not an SGA Joker type player. He wants to get others involved. Like his stat line is a perfect stat line for him. It's 15 to 20 points, dozen assists, and half a dozen rebounds. That's really what he wants. He doesn't want to go out there and have to put up 30 or 40 points, and that's really not how this team's built. I mean, they were down, like you said, 12, 13 points. And then, you know, Richard Jefferson mentions like, yeah, but they got eight guys with seven or more points. And then, you know, they mentioned, you know, OKC has had trouble closing him out because OKC is like, hey, look, when you play against, you know, Minnesota and Denver, you know, you got to stop Joker. You have to stop Edwards. With Indiana, you don't know if it's Haliburton. You don't know if it's Siakam, Nimmerd. You just don't know who it's going to be because any one of those guys can go for 30 and then the next night get you 12 but still have a productive game. You know, Haliburton, you know, I don't know how bad the leg injury was. You know, they said it was an ankle cramp in game two that he left with, and then now he's got the right calf strain or cramps or tightening up.
Yeah, they just said
we know
cramps,
that can
huh?
be we know that can be scary. We've seen guys go out later that leads to, you know, dare I say it, Achilles injuries. It's been typical. We've saw it with Damian Lillard. We saw it in the NBA Finals 7 years ago of Kevin Durant. Remember, hey, cautious calf strain. Boom, he tears his Achilles. Hoping it's not anything that gets to that. But obviously, it affected his game. You know, no field goals. He's missed his last 10 three-pointers. He's got to come out aggressive in game six and set the tone early. Whether or not that's, you know, getting 10 points, 12 points in that first half, something like he did in game three. But yeah, like Jason mentioned, I think if he can set the tone and it be a threat on the offensive end, that opens up other things because then guys will start guarding him tighter and that will leave the wing players open to get some more shots. And that's how, you know, we talked about, you know, Benedict Mathurin and getting 27 points. Haliburton, that was probably his best game in the series. And then that got him a lot of one-on-one. That helps those players out.
Are you guys still, well, Jason, do you think they close it out the next game? Or we go to
Thunder?
Game seven? Yep.
Well, I'll go with my prediction that the Thunder were in six. I think they close it out.
AT, what are you thinking?
I like Indiana in game six. It goes to seven. Sunday night, big game.
Do you guys know when was the last time we had a game seven in the NBA Finals?
I don't. Was it Lakers?
No.
Lakers Celtics? Did they go seven?
No, a little bit before that. Or
was it Spurs Heat? Ray Allen and those guys won, right?
I think more recently. It will be 2016. Cavaliers taking out the Golden State Warriors in game seven.
They came back from 3-1 down after Draymond Green's famous suspension cost them the finals.
Yeah. So it'd be kind of crazy they do. Game six is on
Thursday night.
Game seven on
Sunday,
if we get there. Okay.
I do. You talk about the schedule. Here's my biggest pet peeve, and it's making the way it rains. Why wasn't there a game yesterday?
Dude, this Sunday, it would have been perfect.
I'm old enough to remember like Jordan winning the NBA Finals on Father's Day, you know, in a game six. We're like a week behind. I feel there's been like 4 days between every one of these games. I don't know, between the NHL and the NBA. Like, we're just like, we're leaving way too much space for travel and everything like that going on for these games right now. Like, this is pretty
paid way too much. It's getting too cushy. I was like, this is ridiculous, man. The playoffs should not be 2 months long.
Well, the finals is basically a week between games, like Jason mentioned.
It's crazy.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I know, like, you know, Father's Day is kind of that thing when the NBA Finals ends. But we're like, we got two games left, and we're, you know, I don't know. The game should have been last night, you know, game five. But even then, I think we should be on to game six or seven already by the time the season's wrapping up right now. But, you know, we got game six is going in both series right now. And like, we're going to be in July here at a certain point.
We should have had a game. I agree yesterday, but. Yeah, I mean, we're talking about they were mentioning, I think they opened up the broadcast like, oh yeah, Indiana's won in Oklahoma City. It was like 11 days ago, they said. I'm like, Jesus, the final started 11 days ago and we're only on game five?
Yeah, it was game one. That's crazy. I got nothing left, at least for this game. We'll come back and talk about more NBA, but I want to jump to the Stanley Cup Finals. Game five was just the other day, Saturday. Florida taking the commanding 3-2 lead. They won 5-2. They were up, 2-0 in the first period. And the third period was exciting as usual, seeing Edmonton try to claw back. Right when they scored a goal, Florida answered. Right when they scored another goal, Florida answered again. It was just like really demoralizing. That's when I turned it off. I think I texted you guys that my daughter was done watching it. She's like, Dad, let's just give up, okay? Our team's going to lose. And it was just like disheartening. So I put on Madagascar. But I was just talking to Aaron right now, before you jumped on, Jason, while you're fixing your technical difficulties. Edmonton has looked underwhelming throughout the whole Stanley Cup, in my opinion. Like, they just Florida just like out hustles them in every way. And Brad Marchand, like, I remember when they signed him in the offseason, I'm thinking like, dude, that could potentially be a big thing if they make it this far. And he is the biggest fucking difference. Yeah. And it's fucking crazy. Are you as disappointed in Edmonton as I am? What, like,
absolutely.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely. Cause I mean, this, to me, they went down 3-0 a year ago, and it was just, I mean, it was so disheartening that they didn't take one of those early games in the series, and they came storming back, winning three straight and forcing that game seven, and ultimately just came up a little bit short. I felt there was a little more in it for Edmonton this year to prove, hey, we really owned that series last year. We blew it because going down, you know, down 3-0 at the start of the series, they're able to storm back last year without, I don't want to say another great series. Like, it just wasn't a good series by Leon Draisaitl. And I felt like if Draisaitl is going to have anything this year better than last year, this team's going to be so much better. And Draisaitl's came up big in some moments.
Good
and
one.
Where they're competitive. Give Florida credit is they've really been able to neutralize Connor McDavid throughout this season.
Dude, he finally scored, finally. But yeah.
Yeah. I mean, getting it all the way to game five until he scores. So, I mean, he's had his impact on the game, but hasn't allowed, you know, Florida has not allowed him to get in the open ice to have the type of opportunities. And I heard someone, you know, Marchand, you said, I think it was game four where he basically like crossed over one of the Edmonton defenders, like puck through there, and was able to get one of his goals in that game. And that's literally what McDavid has been like doing all season, this series, and hasn't been able to foresee it to a goal. And but yeah, 100% disappointed, but I think you give Florida credit is the way this team is built, as far as, you know, that hard-nosed style, you know, two-way players that you're getting with Barkov, and the way, you know, Kachuk's just a grinder in it. But Marchand, like, that was a trade where you're taking kind of a legacy player from one of your biggest rivals in Boston. And, you know, we talked about the salary cap manipulation that goes on with these teams to be able to sign like a guy who's, you know, a high end player and basically get him for a rental at a high price, and you're way over the salary cap, but it's okay in the playoffs. And so you're having a deeper team than most. The Lightning were doing it for years, but he's been the biggest difference, you know, maker. It's been crazy. And there's a lot of Florida Panthers fans that were iffy on this because you don't take guys from a rival that you've been beating up in the postseason. But now, you know, he could be ending with the Conn Smythe here and being the playoff MVP for this team and delivering, you know, the back-to-back Stanley Cup. And you wonder if they don't make that trade, Kachuk's been hurt since, you know, the Four Nations, the Four Nations Cup.
Yeah, the groin, you know, injury, right?
Yeah, the groin injury. And he was out the rest of the regular season, and then he hasn't probably looked his best throughout these playoffs. You know, without Marchand, I don't know where this team's at, because I think he gave him the juice in this series, and he definitely has that want. And, you know, when you go on to these winning things, and hockey's such a tough sport to repeat. When you talk about going into these deeper rounds and how much these guys are just beat to heck, and you look at certain runs hockey teams have, and you get like a 3 to 5 year window where you make these deep playoff runs and the teams just fall apart, like physically and just from the salary cap stuff. And, you know, you get these couple shots of midline shots into the blood of the team. And that's what I think Marchand is providing this series. And ultimately, at this point, probably going to be the ultimate difference maker. And I think you're going to need a game six from Edmonton. The stars got to come out to play. Like, McDavid's got to make plays.
They got to fucking
Draisaitl's got to show up. And the bigger thing, the Edmonton defense, and I think the broadcast has talked about that too, because they have not done, you know, the goalies any favor. I know they decided.
Well, like, I think it was like two goals in game five where it just looked like they just saw like that. They just saw like the play stopped or something like that. They were expecting a whistle, then bam, a puck went in.
They've looked slow.
It's like, what the fuck?
They definitely look slow. And some of the dumb turnovers they've had as they've moved the puck that has really just given Florida the opportunities. Like, I didn't love Calvin Pickard in game four, but he did, you know, show something.
Is that the one you're talking shit on, Aaron?
No, he was talking. He was talking mess on Skinner, and Skinner's a starter. But Picker came in for Skinner and was good. He was making the stops, but man, it was wild because there was rebounds and everything going, and there was these couple plays, and I think in game five, you know, Picker a little bit out of position, maybe came out, you know, too much out of the crease in one of those goals.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, those are the things when it comes down to, like, if you're, you know, only getting 18 shots against, you need the goalies to be locked down, but it comes to that defense too. So, you know, Nurse and Ekholm and Bouchard, like, what are these guys going to do to be able to clear out some of the Florida guys that are in front of him that give Picker, you know, clean looks if he's going to be the game six starter, which I think he will be. But they're going to need a defensive and goaltending, like, big time performance, because Edmonton, you know, they need to shut Florida down, and Edmonton needs to come out to score. Because anything in this series, I would have said that the 5-6-1 game that Florida had, or even this 5-2 game, those would have been the Edmonton games, because they're the team that just puts the scoring out there, and it's going to be a track meet. But Florida's been able to find these pesky goals and really lock down, you know, the middle of the ice for Edmonton. So, definitely disappointed in Edmonton, but it's going to be a wild one here, I think, in game six, because there's a lot on the line. And we saw what Edmonton did in that game four when it got a little testy. You know, can they keep their composure, make sure Florida's not getting on the power play, but still make it, you know, a tough physical game?
Yeah, I mean, Edmonton, the key, I think, really for them in game six is stay out of the penalty box. Every time they've been in the penalty box, Florida's gone up, Rome, like you said, 2-0, 3-0. What you said, four straight games, they've been up 3-0 or three goals.
Or at least 2-0. Yeah, they've been up four straight games.
For me, Edmonton has to stay out of the penalty box, and they got to get more from their third and fourth lines. Their depth right now, which we thought was going to be better coming into the series, has really let them down. Their third line, fourth line has been bad, hasn't been great. Their defense hasn't been good. McDavid, like you said, just scored his first goal. They only got 18 shots on goal, I think both teams did in the last game. For me, Edmonton, I want to get pucks to the net, get rebounds, and put pressure. I think Edmonton's been, like Jason said, just too fine with passing and turning it over. Like, just, hey, don't try to make that extra pass. Like, hey, just get a shot on net and see if you can get some traffic in front of the net. And Corey Perry, like, he's there. He can get some knock-in pucks there as well. And Draisaitl, he's been good. I want to see them attack and just get 30, 35 shots, stay out of the penalty box. And I mentioned it before the series started, like, Zach Hyman was a big injury. They lost him late against the Stars. He had 16 goals last year in the postseason. He'd been great this postseason. He's really been missed. I was worried about that as the series went on. It's hurting them. And Brad Marchand has been great. I got to ask, is there like a false start on a faceoff? Because this dude's like taking off three steps in front of people before the puck's even dropped. Is that not like a penalty, a delay game or something?
They should be a reset of the
Because, I mean,
of the,
you saw it too, right? He's already fucking two steps and then he scores a goal. And it's like, dude, like, this guy's already taken off before the puck's drop.
Yeah.
I'm like, am I missing something here? Is my TV behind schedule?
This shit's like high heat.
Now you're right. Aaron, I don't want to let that pat. It's an excellent point for you. You called it in the beginning of the series. I probably downplayed it too much, but the injury to Hyman, I think that is the guy similar to Perry that would have been out there in front of the net, you know, be able to cause havoc and, you know, some of these missing physical things to generate some goals probably is missing from the Hyman injury. And it was a great call by Aaron before the series. And I was just going to bring that up, but you nailed it again, because is this a little bit different offensive team? And is McDavid and Draisaitl able to get a little bit, you know, a little bit pressure off? Cause there was another person out there where Florida's had some guys step up. You know, Oilers aren't exactly deep, because you got Evander Kane out there. Just,
He's looking old. I mean, Evander Kane's looking old these last couple of games, man. I'm not going to lie.
He's looking a little older, and I think he's just trying to go out and hurt people. I think Perry's a little about the similar way. You know, Victor Arvidsson, you know, a little bit of an older player too. And so they've got some experience out there. But yeah, when you talk about looking slow, yeah, Florida just looks a little faster, upbeat. The energy's there.
I mean, somebody needs to check Evander Kane, because that's looking like more like Evander Holyfield the way he's skating on ice right now.
I'll be honest.
He's not looking quick, man. Game one and two, he looked good. Since then, yeah, the Bruiser doesn't look great.
Evander Kane's playing like I did when I played like adult rec league basketball for my friend, where I don't belong out there at all. So my job
you're
is
set, hey, you're setting moving I screens got, all day,
I,
right?
I got six fouls, right? All right, I'm going to use every single one of these guys and put them on their ass.
Every screen's a moving screen, and the referee can't call them all. So hey, that's let's funny. Just keep playing. Yeah. So you think they go back to you think Calvin Pickard's in net game six, or they go back to Skinner?
I don't think so.
Man,
I was reading up at least that like they thought like Pickard did okay. He just like was out of place, and like those goals weren't like really stoppable for the most part. A lot of them were.
Yeah, I wouldn't say I he didn't do bad, but I
he
worry
saved
about
him
his
game
placement.
Four. He did save him game four. Yeah.
Interesting note, man. I saw somewhere the Panthers, man. They have 15 games in this playoffs with four or more goals, second most in history. In a single playoff, that's wild. So, who you guys got in goalie for Game Six?
Well, they haven't as of 9 hours ago. They haven't named one.
No,
man. I think they're going to go back to Skinner.
I agree. I think Skinner has to step up and own it and say I want it. I think it's whatever goalie goes up and says, you know, I want to get it done, because they're going to need a great goaltending performance. I think they can't give up really more than maybe two goals and win this game. It's going to be tough. If they give up more than two, their chances go way down. And Rome, like you just said, Florida scored 15 plus games. They're going to need a great performance from their defense and goaltending. Yeah, we'll see. I think they go back to Skinner too.
Marchand has six goals in five games in the Stanley Cup final.
And half of them are like delay game, false start. So let's just be real on that, man. I mean, Jesus, dude. I could have scored on at least one of those. I could have scored on one of those on a breakaway.
He's the only one by himself. I'm like, what? Like, how do you get open? What?
Why are you looking?
Why is there no one around?
Jason saw it. The tape don't lie. The dude's already two steps off before the puck struck. I'm like, the defense is like looking around like, what the fuck?
I'm glad you mentioned that, because I was thinking that the other day. I'm like, what? Like, how the hell did he? That was quick. Who you guys got in game six? Fuck your predictions. What do you feel like is going
to
happen?
I feel like it has gone to Florida. I'm still going to try to ride with Edmonton, because I want to see great players be respected. And I think Connor McDavid, you know, to get the respect he deserves, he needs to win a Stanley Cup, at least one. You know, what it did for Ovechkin and these guys, and just how we measure people, and how talented McDavid is. And, you know, he's never gonna get the respect he doesn't win the cup. So, like, I want Edmonton to win, but I just feel everything is going Florida's way. And I think they have a complete, probably four lines offensively, really like more three, because they're pretty much three, but I think they got guys, Florida, on every line that's making plays, and Edmonton is just waiting for Draisaitl and McDavid to take them to the finish line. And I think that's been predictable for Florida to just, hey, they are laying out like nothing's out there, and I think that's where Florida's advantage is.
So you got Florida in game six, Jason?
Unfortunately, I'm going to go against my heart, and I will say Florida is going to win.
That's what I was telling Aaron too. I was like, I just don't think any of these series are going to go seven games.
I feel more confident. I think I told you, Rome, when Jason's off of Indiana, forced it to seven. I too like Florida to win. I think it's going to take a great goaltending performance, and I just don't know Edmonton can get that. Their defense, like Jason said, has been not great, unless like Connor McDavid and Draisaitl are insanely good, and Perry gets him a goal or two.
Yeah,
maybe. I do like, though, I think it's a one-score game, but I do like Edmonton on the puck line plus 1.5. If you can get whatever that's going to be, probably like minus 180. I think it's a one-goal victory for whoever wins this one. So I do like Edmonton plus 1.5 on the puck line.
All of Edmonton's wins in this have been just by
overtime, Draisaitl, overtime, right?
And whereas Florida has been like a complete ass-whooping.
Yeah, but I do. I think Florida hoists a cup again.
I hope not, but we'll see how
it goes. I too. I'm rooting for Edmonton, but I think logic says right now Florida's been the better team. Sam Bennett and those guys
look like they're in full control. Yeah, they just got the vibe, man. They're loving every moment, and Edmonton just looks irritated almost every second.
But maybe Edmonton gets off to a fast start and stays out of the penalty box and gets great goaltending play. That's the key, I think, right now for them.
The only time they look like they're playing good is if they're down by two or three goals.
Three goals.
Period.
Yeah. They're kind of like the Pacers in the NBA, right? Got to be down 20 before they get going. It's
really
a weird
frustrating
thing,
dude.
There's no two-point puck shot, so that's the only difference.
All right, let's take a quick break. We'll come back, talk some more NBA and some baseball and F1. All right, we can all thank Jason for hooking us on F1 for a full calendar year. As the Canadian Grand Prix was really frustrating for me, as I'm a Norris fan, and just seeing him just hit the wall, that left tire hit the wall, man, just like tumble around, knocking back from Piastri and just, you know, giving up points and having Piastri have a bigger lead and the driver's championship. And then, you know, it was just a tough one, but it seemed like he owned it almost immediately. If you didn't watch the F1 race from qualifying to, you know, lots of movement throughout, a lot of haters, man, on Russell on X. I got to say, a lot of people are not happy that he won, and that he just think, like, a lot of people just think he's just a little bitch. So he kind of shut up a lot of people on it, and X was going crazy. But all the drama was around the McLaren teammates as they were vying. I think fifth and fourth at the time. Norris had the fastest laps up to date and just making up ground. Piastri could not get close to Antonelli. And then, so I thought maybe Lando would, you know, move into fourth and get closer, try to make a move onto podium, but all that went wayside. I think it was lap 67. Was that it?
Yeah, it was 67. It was definitely three laps remaining.
Yeah. And then, so, you know, the race ends under the caution, pretty much wrapped everything up. But, Jason, man, give us your two cents on what happened on the Grand Prix in Canada.
Yeah, I mean, for the most part, it was a average to almost boring race to a degree. There was some different tire strategies and people that were doing some stuff in there. It was an hour talking about the graining of tires and where things were going on that. So if you're an F1 nerd like me, hey, this is super interesting. But if you're casually watching it, it's like, okay, we're just talking about tire graining for an hour and a half. But yeah, it really got there towards the end between the two McLaren drivers. And we talked about it all season. McLaren's won the constructor. They've had the best car. We talked about the flexi wing changes at Spain, and the McLaren's only got faster during that weekend. So, hey, it's going to be between Norris and Piastri, and maybe who qualifies better and puts themselves in a position in the race. But they've built such a lead at this point, and I've applauded McLaren to a degree that, hey, they're going to let the drivers decide it on the track. It's not going to be about, you know, the team game and just, hey, you stay where you're at, and, you know, hey, we're going to race it on the track, which I think was fine. But I think you can't just let Norris, even though you said he was storming up the field a bit and was putting in some good laps over Piastri, he's got to make the pass. And three laps to go. If you're not familiar with the, you know, the Canadian Grand Prix, you know, there's a big stretch that you get the DRS right down before the pit lane. And then you kind of get this chicane going right, left really quick that goes up against the wall of champions. It was basically all these F1 champions have smashed into. And so, you know, Norris and Piastri. You didn't know this? Yeah. So they call the wall of champions. So, right. And not the one Norris hit, not that wall. It's the wall before that. But, you know, Kimi Antonelli had third. He had both McLarens behind him. Both McLarens have DRS going down this stretch. And I think Kimi even talked about in the post race, was like, I didn't know what to do. They both were like coming. It was like, which one do I give the slipstream to? Because he basically almost potentially was going to get passed by one because they both were going to have it going. Yeah. But Norris and Piastri were racing. Norris was on the outside. He got kind of into the racing line to a degree, but Piastri was on the right side. Norris kind of ran out of room. He backed out of the throttle right before the turn, got the good momentum, you know, get to the final turn, right to the wall of champions, right behind Piastri, had the better momentum in the line going into the turn, you know, gets alongside him to his left and just tons of racing room to the right. And Piastri was on the racing line, so you don't fault him for that. But Norris shoots for a gap just as frankly isn't there. Like, I mean, I'm pretty sure the broadcast was on Norris's driver cam during it, and you immediately just see him kicking up grass, and then a split second later blows up, you know, the left tire into the wall. And you're like, what is he doing? And there, I think there was just so many other places on the track that if he was going to pass Piastri to make this move, he could have done it. He immediately took accountability for it on the radio and in post race and apologized to Piastri and all that stuff. Because yeah, he was wrong. And these are the moves Man, it just wasn't smart. It wasn't about being aggressive. It just wasn't smart. And that's the knock on Norris, is he hasn't been like bold, like Verstappen and potentially Piastri. You needed Norris to make a bold move, but is this too bold as just a dumb move? And I think he's accountable to that, because great, he lost a bunch of more points to Piastri and the drivers. If he just would have stuck where he was at, he only would have lost, I think, like 4 points.
Yeah.
But now he lost 8 or 10 or whatever it would have been compared to what Piastri got. And so when it comes down to the end of the season, this could have been a crucial 10 points that he doesn't get because he was trying to be overly aggressive and potentially taking Piastri in a spot that he would have, you know, could have been a more natural racing move. So
they were showing how, like, even like I forgot one of the broadcasters, he was saying like, well, it kind of looks like he has a gap and then it just disappears really quickly and he just didn't react properly. So he was kind of defending that move, but maybe it was just a little too aggressive at that time too.
Yeah, I think naturally the racing line's taking you. It's taking you left into that wall, and that's where Piastri's going. And yeah, it just, I don't think turn one was the right place to make that move. And
dude, it was the slightest bump too. And I'm just like, what? That's it? You're done?
I mean, pretty much. It just takes out the front axle where things in that car. I mean, you're so sensitive. Unlike the NASCAR race, we talked a little about, where these guys are just bumping all the hell out of each other down down in Mexico for that road race. That was a thing to be seen. So, but yeah, it was disappointing for Lando. I mean, I said at the beginning of the year, this is Lando's year to win a driver's championship. I don't know if he gets another shot at it. I don't know if McLaren's car is going to be dominant as it is going into the new regulations. So this is the year where, you know, Lando maybe has that opportunity that he may not get again. Because, you know, the type of, you know, and that's saying a lot. He's a young guy and has a big future ahead of him, but you don't know what the next regulation is going to give, because the newest regulation that came out gave Verstappen 4 straight world championships and no one was really close to him for, you know, 3 of those years. So this is kind of his time to win. A lot of people think Mercedes is going to be, you know, good next year, and it could be George Russell's time if he's back in Mercedes, that he could be dominant.
He's been good all year.
He has been. And so allegedly Mercedes will have the leg up next year with their engine. And that's what everyone's saying. We'll see. There's a lot to go that goes into that and unknowns, but
just don't put that power unit in your vehicle.
Well, this year's power unit, definitely. I don't know. There's some questions about that one. So, but yeah, I mean, it's also, as you said, you're a Lando fan. I know I'd like to see Lando do it. I think he was long overdue for that first win last year, but I think this is his shot this year. And at a certain point, you know, if he doesn't get it done this year and Piastri turns out to be more of the number one driver and to get it done in qualifying and isn't dropping the ball and making dumb moves like this one, you know, he may never win the world championship. And it's unfortunate because he's a really good driver, but, you know, it's stacked at the top of this field right now.
Yeah. I think this was Russell's first win, right?
First win since Vegas last year.
Yeah. One of the funny storylines that I enjoyed reading afterwards was Lewis Hamilton being sad because apparently he ran over a groundhog, and apparently this track is known for millions of groundhogs living on there, and there's been stories of them, you know, dying from time to time. So he was bummed out at the end of the race knowing that he killed one. It just jacked up the undercarriage. So I just thought, out of everything, it was just like the funniest storyline I read of how bummed he was on that.
It's definitely happened before. He's definitely an animal lover, so it's bummed there. But I think, I don't know, I mean, I don't know if he'll admit this, but I mean, you're bummed about the animal, the groundhog desk, but you're also bummed because, yeah, him busting the undercarriage was costing him time.
It
put his car in no man's land. He was just stuck. He was in seventh place, but he went to sixth because of land.
Yeah.
I mean, he couldn't go nowhere. Like, he was faster than everyone behind him, but he was losing ground to everyone in front of him. Like, I think there's a point of the track map. There's no one in front of him, no one behind him. Like, I'm just in it for a ride because the groundhog messed up the undercarriage and the aerodynamics of the car. So the downforce sucks. So, I mean, yeah.
Dude, how could a groundhog jack it up that much? Like, I'm just like, how low is it?
I mean, the cars are super low to the ground. Yeah, I mean, so like,
it was a groundhog.
I mean, pretty big. I mean, there's video out of it. I mean, but yes, this has happened before. Yeah.
I gotta find the video.
Groundhog roadkill.
Yeah, I mean,
dude, I almost ran over.
He went quick. Let's put it that way. He went quick.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
But this track is notorious for that. But more often, it's just kind of messed up his race. I don't know if he would have done much better where it was at, but
5.
But I want to go back to the George Russell conversation.
Yeah.
Talking just people. George Russell's had an interesting career. Like, him coming up through like the karting world and just through Formula, the Formula Under Series and Formula 2, Formula 3 and stuff. Like, this is a guy who, amongst his peers, because he's friends with Norris and Albon and Gasly and all these guys, like, they're all friends and stuff have come up.
Really?
Like, yeah. So Norris is seen Russell was seen as like the guy out of all of them. Like, he's kind of been like, and he's a little bit older than I think some of them as they were kind of coming up. But like, he was kind of seen as the guy of all of them, because he was kind of just a little bit, maybe like a big brother to him to a degree. And, he got with Williams, had some pretty good years, and then was really waiting to get the Mercedes seat, which he eventually got. And then when he got the Mercedes seat, the Mercedes wasn't good as it was the previous 7 years. And so kind of got stuck with the ish car that's been basically a second to fourth place constructor car. And so, but when the car is on, like, George is like one of the best in the world. Like, that's why I'm just kind of going to next year. If Mercedes has the best car, I mean, you could see him starting to dominate in a certain way. The Mercedes car is very interesting. I love racing, but I'm not enough gearhead to understand why. But the Mercedes car works well when it's cold. So I was at the British Grand Prix last year. It was like freezing cold and it was raining. And that's when Hamilton and Russell were dominating. Hamilton ended up winning that race. And then this race in Canada, it was cooler during qualifying, which is basically how he got the pole. And the race was pretty cool overall. But there's something about that Mercedes car that responds to the colder conditions that is not as good when they get into some of the warmer climates.
That's tighter. So
it's kind of interesting as they go to these tracks. Now, you're into summer months. You're not going to have many cold days. Maybe the British Grand Prix is cooler again, like it was for me last year when I was there. But I think the Mercedes car has its moments. I don't think you're going to see George contending for the world championship, but he's definitely going to give Verstappen a run for his money for third. And it could be the difference between what Antonelli gets. This could put Mercedes into number two, for the constructors overall, as you'll probably have a pretty tight race between Mercedes, Ferrari, and maybe Red Bull for second in the constructors. At this point, if Sonoda doesn't do anything, it's pretty much going to be Mercedes and Ferrari, because Verstappen's holding Red Bull altogether by himself at this point. George is an interesting case, because I think he never got the shot with the really good Mercedes car that was so dominant with Lewis and Valtteri Bottas and Nico Rosberg before Bottas. Like, so they were such a dominant in that, 2010 to 2021 era. How, if Mercedes has the 2026 car that go the distance, you can see this a lot more, where Russell's there. And then, Kimi Antonelli, we talked a little bit about him, 18 years old, first podium.
That was awesome.
The next prodigy we're kind of talking about. And at some point he's going to want to be the number one driver too. And you may get a little competition between the two there. All that said, Russell still not signed for 2026.
Yeah. There's like some rumors about it. And he was kind of joking at what he might do.
Verstappen a free agent too, right? And I think we talked about possible swapping or something like that, those two.
Verstappen's not a free agent. I think he has some different opt-out clauses he can do based on like how many points he has compared to his teammate and things like that.
Well, his teammate ain't got no points, so whatever that clause is, he ain't got to worry about that.
There may be an out clause for him at a certain point, but he's not exactly a free agent. But at a certain point during the break, so we're talking like mid-July, that's where these teams start securing some of those contracts for next year. So, I mean, Mercedes probably wants to move on it. Red Bull basically has an open seat for the number two Red Bull spot. I don't think Red Bull is going to sign Russell if they still have Verstappen, because those guys hate each other.
They hate each other.
So
that'd be great. That'd be a great storyline, but yeah, well, it's not going to happen.
Alpine basically did this a couple years ago when they signed Pierre Gasly and Esteban Ocon, because those guys notoriously hate each other from karting days, and they signed each other, and just, you could tell they just absolutely couldn't stand the sight of each other the entire time they were teammates.
Taking a quick look at the constructor standings, McLaren, I think they're safe to say that they're going to run away with the championship this year. But you got Mercedes barely 17 points ahead of Ferrari. Ferrari's been sticking around.
So Mercedes in second right now?
Yeah, 199 to 183. Red Bull is in fourth with 162. But Mercedes has been pretty consistent. The fact that Ferrari, it's because both the drivers have been getting
George,
still points.
Like you said, George Russell's been on podium a lot. This was his third or fourth podium. First time he won, but
fourth, I think. Yeah,
yeah.
But Russell's good. I mean, Russell's good. I mean, you mentioned they drive good in the cold. Maybe it's that silver jacket to be wearing. You know, he just gives them that extra juice going into qualifying and take that P1 position. But yeah, Mercedes is great. Norris, like you guys said, almost, you know, jacked it up for McLaren for the weekend. Piastri got, you know, fourth, but it could have been a crash and they both got eliminated and got no points. That would have been devastating for him. Probably not to cost themselves the Constructors' Cup, but Drivers' Championship is there. And, you know, like early in the race, I mean, Piastri basically gave the third spot to Antonelli there on what was it, turn two in the flap one, didn't force it. Figured, you know what, hey, if I get fourth, I still get the points. That was a smart race that he raced. Norris, the complete opposite, just kind of like a madman on their track, ended up costing him. And probably cost him maybe possibly the Drivers' Championship, like you guys said. We'll see what happens here going forward.
All right, let's transition out of here. We spent a lot of time on F1.
Hold on. Before you go.
God damn it, dude.
I know.
What's up?
I know, Rome, but you're not going to let me have any more racing. But I got to say, as much as I criticize the NBA for not having, or the NHL for not having a Father's Day game, yesterday was a great motorsports day. So you only talked about F1, but we had NASCAR down in Mexico City for the first points race ever outside the U.S., which is a pretty great.
I missed it.
It was a pretty great race. It was on Amazon Prime. It was at the Autodromo Hermanos Rodriguez, where Formula One races down there in Mexico City. Pretty entertaining race. It was in the rain. NASCAR in the rain. I'll be honest, the cars look super slow compared to the F1 cars going around there. But these guys were bumping into each other left and right. So you had that. Then you had a primetime race for IndyCar in St. Louis that was pretty entertaining itself, too. So I got to say, Gearhead Sunday for the motorsports. You had F1, you had NASCAR, you had IndyCar. It was a great overall Father's Day if you're into the motorsports. So just had to put that out there. You know, big win, for SGG, road course specialist in NASCAR. And then, you know, had a really entertaining IndyCar race as well, too. So just want to put that out there, Ro. You know, just want to make sure I give you all the racing factoids as you get back into NBA.
I appreciate it. A couple big mega trades, man, in the NBA as well as in Major League Baseball out of nowhere. It was some funny videos on TikTok. I guess we'll just start with baseball real quick, of where there was a whole bunch of Boston guys, dads having beers with the families. And then like one of the daughters was like, hey, you know, one of your guys got traded to the Giants. And they're like, get out of here. Quit fucking around with us, right? And then they're just like, whatever. You don't know anything. It's just some TikTok, you know, hoax bullshit. And then a couple minutes later, one of the dad's phones bling, bling, blings. It's like the ESPN notification. He's like, what the fuck? It actually did happen. And then like the same face and all the dad's faces at the same fucking time that Father's Day just got fucking ruined because they just lost another perennial face of the franchise for the second time like in a decade. Mookie Betts would be the first one in case no one knows about that one. But they trade their disgruntled third baseman turned DH to the San Francisco Giants for their pitcher that was about to go against the Dodgers down in L.A. Aaron, I'll let you kick us off, man. Tell us a little about this trade and why did it happen?
Yeah, I mean, I got the text from Jason around, what, about 4:30?
Jason, 4:30 you did PM. Send it.
Yeah,
huh?
Jason sent it. At first, I was, you know, wasn't sure. I'm like, well, let me go check with the sources, you know. But sources really don't lie to us. And then, boom, there it was. Devers traded to the Giants for multiple players. First thing that strung in my head is, Jason, and you know, we're in a baseball league. I just traded for the Giants' top minor league prospect. So the whole time, I'm like, oh, my God, I hope he's not in this trade because that just screws me. So I'm looking around. They're like, oh, and every Red Sox fan's like, this dude better be in the trade. I'm like, oh, God, no, hopefully not. Oh, man. So once I saw he wasn't in the trade, I breathed a sigh of relief. I'm like, oh, thank you. Thank you. That would have ruined my plans going forward for this.
You guys are hilarious.
For this game plan I got going into next year, loading up on minor league talent. But, yeah, I mean,
Aaron is doing a Red Sox waving the white flag in the fantasy league right now. He is preparing to 2026 offloading dudes for minor league prospects.
I'm getting better prospects back than the Red Sox got back. That's for sure.
Having a bad year, man.
Absolutely are.
You having a bad year?
Yeah, yeah. I'm out. I'm glad to see Jason's now in fifth place.
I'm in fifth. I don't like being in fifth place, Rome. I'll tell you, we're getting too much in this league, but I literally hover between fifth and seventh. Fifth is in the money, and I hover on the borderline of money in both years now. So I don't know if I'm a buyer. I don't know if I'm a buyer or seller at the deadline.
I'm gonna find out tomorrow how much of a buyer Jason is. What he's willing to bet on.
Where are you at, dude? Where you at?
I'm in eighth.
You're in eighth. Okay. It's just no
I
way.
I was neck and neck kind of with Jason there. Like, we were kind of flipping between sixth, seventh, and eighth. And then I lost both my starting pitchers for one for the season and another for like a month. And I was like, like Jason, I'm like, it's not really worth it for me to go to fifth. Like, let me see if I could trade some of these guys because I got some old contracts. And then I was like, well, I got a couple of minor leaguers I'm interested in. And then I was able to make a couple deals. So, but yeah, if he would have got traded to the Red Sox, that would have really bummed me out. But Bryce Eldridge staying with the Giants. So that's good. But Romy, getting back to Rafael Devers, I mean, this goes back to spring training, signing Alec Bregman. You said,
they're not happy.
He wanted to play third base. He only wanted to play third base. They wanted him to go to first base. Rumor is they asked him to take ground balls there. He basically told him to F off.
But dude, ownership flew out. I think they were playing St. Louis at the time, and they had a private meeting with him. He's like, nope, you guys are so good at finding players. Go find yourself another first baseman. Told him to go fuck off. So he's been upset the whole time.
Yeah. And I think, you know, you've got over $300 million invested in this guy over 11 years. You know, they basically started making some phone calls, and give credit to Buster Posey. You know, the Giants have been looking for a big bat to get Aaron Judge. They try to get Ohtani. They signed Willie Adames in the offseason to, I think, $210 million. They got the guy leave. They brought in from Korea. So now they take on the full salary, which is about $266 million, $250 plus, whatever it is. They got Devers for 9-plus years.
That's awesome.
The pitchers they gave up on, I'm not real high on. Kyle Harrison's okay. Jordan Hicks, he's a reliever at best. I think it's Tobbs or Tubbs is an outfielder that's pretty high prospect within the Giants system. And then another young guy.
James Tibbs.
Tibbs, okay.
And Jose Bello. Bello?
Yeah.
Yep.
So Bello's not really ranked in their system. He's a young arm. He's only 20. But Tibbs is in their top five minor league guys. I think more importantly for Boston is the Giants are taking on the full salary. That's $250 million that now the Red Sox have. I know your guy Bill Simmons has a conspiracy that they're using that money to sign some players over for Liverpool. They're owned by the same ownership group. But hey, the guy wanted out. They moved him out. And I think ultimately it's a good deal for both teams, but right now we'll see. We'll see what Tibbs turns into, but the Red Sox got money to spend later if they want to. Got rid of a disgruntled player, and the Giants, they do have, Chapman there at third base. I don't know what his contract is going forward, but you got a third baseman in DH Endeavors. Like I said, you got my minor league prospect, Bryce Eldridge, 6'7". He'll be first base of the future going forward. Giants got a good infield, that's for sure.
Aaron hit it on, as much as you're going to roast the Red Sox for giving away like a second generational quote unquote player, which for really nothing, they get Verdugo and now Jordan Hicks and a bunch of others. They have nothing they really speak for, but what they gave themselves was the financial flexibility. So if you're talking about, you know, $200-300 million that they're getting off and they're not paying anything on this contract and the Giants are willing to take it on. Okay, cool. Like, who's open in the offseason? The dirty secret about baseball that they want into a certain point, these players get to a point, is how much are they worth a little bit more in kind of their, if you're going to look at their war and their wins buzz replacement. You give a guy $500 million, is he really giving you everything he can? Right now, the name of the game for a lot of these teams is like, how do I get the most out of these guys in their 5-6 years all the way through arbitration? And they got another guy to replace them that can go through, you know, it's the same cheap model of going, you know, regardless of the market. And so if it's this disgruntled and you're at where you're at, and Devers has had an okay year, but he really was terrible at the start of the year, wasn't worth the contract at all.
Devers strike out like 16 straight times to start the year? It was like a record, whatever it was to start the season.
It was something insane. It's like that. So, but you know, if you're not going to deliver on this big contract, then okay, cool, get rid of him. And Boston is not like they're not spending money, but cool. No, we're not spending. Everyone is getting all this money we're keeping on the roster. They still have stuff coming up from a developmental standpoint. And so they're trading away, they're getting nothing back, but but they're allowing themselves to spend money differently in the future. And at least there's some sort of game plan. It doesn't feel great because when you want stars on your team, I, for one, as a White Sox fan, would love for them to spend $100 million on a player every once in a while. But when you look at the Rays or you look at the A's when they were good and some of these other teams, I mean, even as insane as Rome's Dodgers are for spending money, the one thing the Dodgers do great is they got a bunch of cheap guys always coming up that are like the highest prospects in baseball. And that allows them to spend $1 billion on Ohtani and these other guys because they do have the deep pockets. But what keeps them going is like, hey, we can develop Corey Seager and let him go. We can trade for who they trade for from the Nationals and just let him go. I forgot who it was. Who
Scherzer. Started
the
Phillies? Scherzer?
No, the shortstop.
Oh,
I'm drawing a blank.
You guys know the names better than me.
Damn, I'm trying to remember now.
I can't remember. But, I mean, they're able
they
to
have they traded for Machado back in the day, too.
Right. They did. Just let him go. So, I mean, they've had the ability to go, get players, let their grown prospects go wherever it had been, sign the guys when they needed. So, the Red Sox aren't spending the money like the Dodgers, but they do have a ton of guys, coming up through the system. So, if that's here to defend the Red Sox decision-making process, that could be it. For the Giants, like Aaron said, they've been trying to spend money like crazy. Like, please take this money. We are trying to give it to somebody, Judge, Ohtani, all these guys. Okay, cool. Fine, we got the big bat that could be in this lineup because in this division that is just so stacked with the Dodgers and the Padres and the Diamondbacks, like they need some impact bats inside that lineup that they haven't had just yet. So, you could see it's a win-win for both teams. It just doesn't look good if you're a Red Sox fan. And we traded away Mookie Betts, Devers, and Chris Sale. And we got Alex Verdugo and some other guys that we don't have anymore back in return.
Yeah, they started out really hot, the Red Sox, and they kind of went on this little stinker for like the last month or so.
I mean, the Red Sox, they're below 500 still, right? A couple games below or right at 500. I mean, they've been playing better. They just swept the Yankees. I think that's what's...
Yeah, they took 2 out of 3, and they just called it Roman. So, they got some excitement there. But
and they just brought up their top minor league prospect too, a guy by the name of Roman.
Roman. So, Roman Empire begins.
Yeah.
Yeah, he just hit his first home run today, I think. But San Francisco's been trying to find another big bat for a long time. You mentioned Chapman, though. He's been out all year long. I'm not sure if he's going to come back until like after the All-Star break. And then they had Smith there, I think, on third base, but he's been hurt as well. So I guess like some of the rumors, at least here in San Francisco, is like, where's Devers going to play? Because he obviously doesn't want to play any other position in Boston. Is he open to, plugging and playing somewhere else? Because Chapman, he's hell of a lot better than what Bregman was.
And, I'm pretty sure I read a quote that to say that Devers said he's willing to play anywhere that's best for the team. So,
because when you have a guy like Chapman,
Chapman's out. I mean, he'll play. I think he's probably going to play a lot of.
I think he'll play DH. A little third base then.
I mean, first base right now for them. I mean, they got rid of Lamont Wade. They got Flores there. He plays Wilmer.
Flores
plays
is gone after this year.
Yeah,
I think.
But that's what I mean. Eldridge, their main guy in the minor leagues, the 6'7" guy, is the first baseman of the future. So he'll either be up sometime this year or next year.
So they just said, fuck it. We're just going to get a big bat and figure it out later, huh?
Yeah, their infield next year will be scary with Devers, Willie Adames, and you add in Eldridge there. I mean, they're going to have some serious pop and power, and they got some talent there, man. The Giants have had some good teams, and with Buster Posey running the thing, the Giants have always looked good when Posey's in the organization. He's back doing things.
Yeah, he's done more than like the 4 to 6 months he's been here than the previous regime done in like whatever how long he was here. Ah, it's gonna be scary, man. I don't like the Giants being really good because tickets are gonna go up. Not gonna be able to see my.
Well, I think Rome, you're complaining about tickets, but you're really worried about what the Dodgers are gonna do because the Giants traditionally have owned the Dodgers in the playoffs.
Have they?
Well, those World Series they won.
They didn't play the dude like their wild card shit.
I mean, Bumgarner, Kershaw. There was always
those fucking
Kershaw,
lucky streaks.
Kershaw was great all the way up to October, and then he could never beat Madison Bumgarner and Posey in the postseason.
Those Giant teams were like weird, man, because they were like mid all season long, and then they just got hot at the right moment.
They're trending again in that direction.
It only matters in October, Rome. That's what it's about.
Yeah. All right. We'll flip over before you guys piss me off. We're going to flip over to the NBA.
You know, when Rome, because we remember, Jason, we were planning on doing the show yesterday. I thought maybe Rome was going on another 1 month retreat with Devers coming over, that he was getting scared again and just going to disappear off the Joshua tree or something. But yeah, you know,
Dodgers
are going to
win a
back.
Couple more. Dodgers are going to win a couple more. I ain't worried. NBA blockbuster trade. I don't know. Everyone's calling it a blockbuster trade. I didn't think it was, but it is a pretty big deal. Bane from
Memphis
again? Memphis. I was going to say Timberwolves for some reason. I couldn't get the Grizzlies, the other bear. I guess Timberwolves is not a bear, though, right? It's a wolf. What is it? Whatever.
It's a wolf? I don't know. Not a bear? Because it's a wolf?
Well, one's a grizzly, one's a Timberwolf, they say. So, hey.
One of the animals in the forest. Bane got...
Are there grizzlies in Memphis, though? Because, I mean, there was in Vancouver. I just don't know if there are in Memphis.
I don't even know where Memphis is at, dude.
Tennessee.
No. That'd be a no.
I don't know what's in Appalachia. So
yeah, that's
Be like different bears, right? They have to be different bears.
I don't know. It's one of those things where we just
are there bears in Chicago?
Yes.
Okay.
Ones that lose a lot, but they're there.
Yeah, they're lost, right? They want to get out of Chicago, but yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, big blockbuster trade. Magic get Desmond Bane from the Grizzlies for 4 first-round picks. Memphis got KCP, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Cole Anthony, 4 first-round picks, and another first-round pick swap.
Hold on. Grizzly bears found in the northwestern region of North America, so Alaska, Montana, Wyoming, Idaho, and Washington. So Vancouver, where they were at, that's where
yes,
they were at.
That makes sense.
I don't know about bears in Memphis.
It has to be some type of bear, like probably like a smaller bear, a little Winnie the Pooh bear. Black bears. There you go. I don't know what to really think of this trade now that we're trying to figure out like what bears belong where in the U.S.
Just like looking for those lakes in Los Angeles, you know,
Echo Park, Lake Paris,
Lake Elsinore.
Lake Elsinore, we got 3 lakes in the greater LA
lake,
area.
We got what Lake Matthews over here too. So.
Oh, dude, yeah. There we go. Okay, cool. Yeah. Leave the Lakers alone. All right. Anyways, big trade. Hopefully, like this might be like the first of many this offseason. They did it on an off day, obviously, as the NBA doesn't like teams doing big trades when there's NBA finals. Next up, possibly Kevin Durant. We'll see where he goes, but. Desmond Bane, great player. I like him. I just didn't think why it was 4 first round picks. KCP, I know he had a mixed year in Orlando. Orlando's a really solid team, but I don't know what the mix is with Bane and you got Banchero and like all the other guys.
I think it's a good trade for the Magic. I mean, their downfall is all year. They're the worst 3-point shooting team. They shot the least amount of 3-pointers, and they couldn't score from the perimeter. That's why they got beat by Boston. Now you bring in Desmond Bane. We know he can shoot the ball from the 3-point range. I believe he shot 42%. In the last 5 years, I believe he's in the top 4 made 3-pointers up there with Curry and those guys.
I did not know that.
Yeah, so he can shoot the 3-ball. He gives them a weapon on the perimeter to go with Banchero and Wagner. We already know they're a really good defensive team. I like it for Orlando, and given where the East is at, New York's, you know, we don't even know who's going to coach that team. If anybody wants to coach that team, no one's really stepped up for that. Boston with Tatum out, you know, they're not going to be going back and making a run to the finals next year. Cleveland's still good. You got Indiana. I think Orlando jumps into the top 4. Rome, we talked about it. Had they not been hurt early in the year, they might've been a top 4 or 5 team.
Yeah,
now I think they,
I liked them.
Now I think they ascend into the top 4. This gives them a real chance to at least get to pass the first round and see if they can make it to a second or an Eastern Conference final and build upon there. So I like the move, actually.
I know with him and Jalen Suggs, man, they're pretty like hefty guys. They're going to be
Suggs is
physical.
Always hurt, too. That's a problem.
Yeah. Well, they got Franz Wagner, Banchero. Pretty talented group. I just don't know how it mixes in that East.
Like Aaron said, I think if you listen to most NBA experts on this, this is a need that the Magic have with a 3-point. And then when you look at the age Bane is at, aligning with Paolo and Suggs and Wagner, like he's right around the timeline. Hey, you're putting together this core to make a run. I think if you're looking at this 2025, 2026 season, cool. It's a big lift for them in the East, puts them maybe in the top four, like you guys said. They're opposed to make a run. I think the question comes into play, you know, where this looks in 2-3 years from now to how the Thunder made all of these picks, just acquiring first round pick after first round pick. And the teams that don't have those first round picks anymore, like what does that kind of turn into? Cause now you're looking at different ways of roster construction. So you look at the Knicks fans a year ago with the Bridges trade, which I don't, was it this, they gave up four. The Knicks did for that instead of the five. So we're just given a half decade worth of first round picks every time we trade for a guy that's, you know, pretty good. You know, I don't know if he's great, but he's pretty good. I think that's where the question with a lot of NBA fans is coming from, is how you're gonna build this roster. But when you have a certain core and you're on a certain window, I think these are the desperation, not only desperate moves, these are the moves you gotta make to get the right guys that you're playing with kind of within that same championship title window. And I think that's what the Magic are looking at right now. It's like, hey, the next 3-5 years we could be great, we can give away these picks, but how are you going to fill in the roster behind that core? That'll be the key.
Do you guys think Orlando made this trade because now with Tatum out, it puts Boston out of the top tier, and maybe there's like a little fight for supremacy here on the East?
I think Tatum out, because I mean, Tatum probably comes back at the All-Star break or afterwards next year, they can make a run and Boston can probably get by. But I think it makes them more competitive because I think the East has shown it could be wide open because the Cavaliers haven't been able to take the step. The Pacers have been, you know, no one's believed of them. They continue to make the step. The Knicks, are they going to get worse next year? Different coach. What's going to be the makeup? So I think if you're looking at the East, it's wide open, you know, between like 1-6 teams right now. To be able to make a run all the way to the finals.
Yeah, I mean, Boston, what is their team going to look like? I mean, Tatum's out. What are they going to do with Holiday? What are they going to do with Porzingis? What are they going to do with those guys? Probably gone. New York, who's going to be the coach there? Interesting, you know, stat I heard. Every coach that's taken over for a team that Tom Thibodeau has coached the next year has done worse than he had done in any previous years, really. So the idea is the Knicks are probably likely going to take a step back unless they get, you know, a home run coach. I don't know who it's going
to
be.
They should go back to Thibodeau and say sorry and rehire him as a coach. Sorry, we messed up. Come back.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen.
Has that ever happened, though? That'd be great.
I mean, it's kind of what the Lakers did with Phil Jackson a few years after he left, and then he came back, what, 3-4 years back later. So kind of similar, but not, you know. But that's the only kind of timeline I can remember of a coach kind of coming back to an organization.
The only other one would have been, what was the Yankees manager that Steinbrenner fired like four times? Billy Martin.
Billy Martin, yeah.
Billy Martin. You don't even know what I think of.
It's happened.
No one else
before.
Wanted the gig, right? It'd be great to see. Yeah. No one could last with Steinbrenner. It was great. Oh, that's a good example. Thank you. That's really good.
But yeah, I mean, getting Bane, that helps. I mean, Detroit's coming up. You know, they almost got out of the first round. And so, yeah, I think this puts them in the top four if they could stay healthy. And you said they gave up, what, four first-round picks, but got, what, swapped two picks back in return, right? So it's really like giving up only two first-round picks when it's all said and done, the whole trade. So it's not that bad.
Yeah, some of the picks are coming, like, from Phoenix and some other teams. So one of them might be able to turn into a lottery pick.
Yeah, I think some may be protected, unprotected. I didn't get into the whole details because, like you said, there was just a lot of, you know, 20, 25, 26 swap, and then a 29, 31 later down the road.
If I'm reading this right, they're giving away their 2025, 2028, and 2030. But 2026 is swap rights from Phoenix and Washington, and then 29 is a pick swap. So, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, I think Desmond Bane makes him better now and makes him more competitive for sure. And like you said, I like, you know, Banchero and Wagner for sure on those guys' team. So now with a perimeter scorer, they're a threat. They're a threat to at least get to the second round and maybe get to the Eastern Conference Final. We'll see.
Since KD's been in the news lately, any predictions on where he might get traded?
I want to keep saying the Heat because I feel the Heat, like, Riley's always going to want to make a splash and it's going to be a too little too late type thing. For Miami,
it's time for Riley to retire.
I don't know. The interesting one to me would be the Spurs, but it'd be like, what would they give up? Because if I'm the Spurs, I'm not giving up my first round pick. Like, I'm going to give you, I'll give you a bunch of second rounders for some crap. But if KD, I think the market's depressed for him right now, and the Suns aren't going to get what they think they're going to get from him. The Spurs would be the interesting one to watch, is how bold do they want to be. If you get another team in there, the Rockets, right, was the other team KD had.
I think the Rockets are going to win the sweepstakes. I think he's going to Houston. I don't think Miami has enough to offer in return, and I don't think San Antonio wants to give up that pick and maybe Castle and a few of their youth talent. That'd be stupid.
They got a good
the guy they're
going
to get at number two is going to be really good. Yeah. He's going to be better than KD here in 2-3 years anyways. I think Houston wants to win now. They kind of got a sour taste in their mouth, and they've got plenty of wing players that would interest the Suns, as well as what they got the number 8-9 pick, whatever it is. I think he ends up in Houston.
Crazy how the Thunder had
him and Harden and old pals. He'll end up down there at the old strip club, hanging out, partying, having a good time.
Westbrook,
Harden, and Durant all going to Houston.
I think so. Crazy. Living the dream, Hakeem Olajuwon style down there, man.
You know what? That's one city I haven't really been to yet. I've not been to Houston yet.
I don't know.
Anyone?
Me neither have I.
Haven't been to Houston.
I heard they have good food. Crowded as fuck.
I'll take your word for it. You're the food expert of the show.
Yeah. I don't know. I just have no desire to go to Houston. I don't know why. One day. All right. We covered a lot, man. We covered everything over the weekend. It was action-packed weekend of sports. I think that's it, right?
Their U.S. Open. There was. We could just talk about the big putt. I mean, I gotta ask Rome. Did you watch any of the U.S. Open?
You know what? I didn't know for the first time in a long time. I didn't know too many of the players. I had it all in the background when my daughter didn't change it to Bluey or Peppa Pig, but Spawn. I know he's made some noise in a few tournaments, but I don't know too much about him. I just know he's around our age. And then whoever blew the big lead going to the final round, I think it was Burns or
that's right. Yeah.
I can't remember. He had the lead and he had some clutch birdies knocking down. What was it, 160 foot putter to seal a 2-stroke lead to win the U.S. Open. A lot of people like him. That's all I know. I know nobody in the top 10, except, the classics Rahm and Scheffler, but everyone else is just smaller names.
Yeah. Yeah. Rahm and Scheffler, Shoffley was tied for 12th. Koepka was around 12th. But I mean, for the most part, those guys really weren't in it. The only guy going under par, in for the tournament, it was pretty insane. I asked, did you see any of the units? So it was more likely, did you see the course? Because the popular thing I was texting with a bunch of my friends that called, what would we shoot at this course?
Oh, dude.
Because literally, if you don't hit the fairway, your ball's in about, 3 feet of grass.
Yeah.
And so they were asking a bunch of the PGA tours. I think it's what would an 18 handicap shoot on this? And most of them were saying 150 to 180. Basically like that or something, which I think is there. I was one of my friends, he's a pretty good golfer. If he tried pretty hard, he could probably be scratched. He's he was saying how he thinks he could be competitive on it. And I think I could shoot 90 on the front probably if I'm looking on there. Cause yeah, I was watching Rory tee off on one of these holes, man. And if your ball went anywhere but the fairway, I don't even know what you'd probably get a little 12 on the hole, at minimum. It was insane watching some of this stuff and what these guys had to go through.
There's a golf course here in the Bay. It's in the East Bay. I played a couple times. I should go back, but if you did not get in the fairway, they had lots of grass and lots of little ponds around it. So you're pretty much screwed. And I could never, I gave myself a lot of mulligans on that one, the way we scored it. But you just drop it because you could not find the ball. And if it was in the grass, good fucking luck, dude. You cannot hit it out. I did not have that skill, or I did not have, know how to pop it out. So if it's anything like that, dude, 150 sounds pretty good.
Yeah.
Minimum.
I don't know. It was
golf,
pretty crazy.
How'd you golf 2 weeks ago there, Jason, at your little tournament?
Yeah.
Not bad. Not bad. So it was Ryder Cup style. It was red team versus blue team. I don't know. We weren't representing nations like the U.S. or Europe. But yeah, my team won. Me and my partner on day one in the first nine, we won the scramble by one. We were one over or plus one there. We beat the other team by one hole. And then back nine played best ball. We won the same one there. So we scored a full point for our team. Day two was the one-on-one matchup. I was saying I was playing a friend of mine who challenged me one-on-one. He said he wanted the showdown with me.
He wanted you. He called you out.
He called me out. Called me out to the guy that organizes it. Yeah. So for me, friend of mine didn't want to embarrass him too bad. So I beat him in 10 holes instead of beating him in 9 holes. Oh,
that's called an ass whipping right there.
Yeah. Won 9 out of the first 10 holes and I bought him the 1-on-1. So basically holes 11 through 18 didn't mean anything because I had already secured the point for our team. So we were the last to tee off. I was the first one to score the victory. So, I'll take it. Wasn't my best round, but I secured maximum points for my team for our Ryder Cup, summer challenge that I golf.
I dig it, man. We're at the golf again. My back is, I realized my back has been spazzing all year round and I finally got like full movement. I went to the gym for the first time on Saturday for Father's Day with my daughter. Now like we got a gym here at the apartment, that's gonna be like our new thing to work out together. I'm gonna come back. I'm ready to go golfing.
You come back. All right. Are we gonna get the show dinner or a round of golf first? What are we doing here first?
Why not both?
Let's start one step at a time, man. Let's get together first, right?
Yeah, my schedule is not as busy anymore. Like I just ended this epic 6-month long ass kicking fucking schedule. Finally slept in this weekend. Felt nice. Finally relaxed my new apartment. Felt nice. Threw out like 60 boxes of cardboard. Still got to figure out what to do with all these Barbie dolls, though.
I guess that you ask your daughter.
Yeah, I'm not sure they're his daughters, for the record, Jason.
Oh,
I'm not sure.
Gotcha. Oh,
I didn't want to go there, but hey.
You know what? I forgot to mention, like, Aaron does like to spend the weekend over here once in a while. And he just, like, goes in the corner, and that's all the action he gets.
Hey, Rome. I thought that was between me and you, dude. You were supposed to keep that between me and you, dude.
He's dating one right now.
Yeah, I got a couple favorites. They're a little jealous, a couple, but you know how it goes.
He's going to be on one of those Lifetime shows. let's do dinner soon. Let's fucking do it.
Wood Ranch, man.
Wood Ranch? You guys only do it on Friday, though, right?
I mean, when you're in town, you just let me know. We go to the Wood Ranch.
That's when Jason goes on Friday, but whenever you want to go.
Well, I'll have my daughter next time. I'll just bring her, and we'll have a good time. Because we're going to hit up Disneyland again.
So she's buying.
She's buying. She has all her Monopoly money.
She got to get the mom's credit card or what?
Yeah.
She should, dude. I got a lot of stuff to say about her mom right now.
She
got to
treat you for Father's Day. So yeah, she owes you one. Dude. She owes you one.
Yeah, I got another court appearance for the fucking mom, This broad's... I wonder how much she thinks about me all the time, I have to go to court every three months. Like, she just must be, like, nonstop thinking about me. It's like, dude, just let me go. Just let me be. Weird. It's weird stuff.
Just found out how many listeners we had,
I would love if she popped in and listened and she can hear the shit talking. Like, your life, dude.
Hey, she would just add another case to that one. I want to take him to court for that one.
Go find a guy that can tolerate some gaslighting. Just find him. Bury that son of a bitch, okay? Find some poor sucker. And kill his soul. I got stuff to do. Me and my daughter got stuff to do.
Rome, that's called finding somebody and paying them. That's what you got to do, right? And there's plenty of guys out there looking for those guys just like you. Please, please set her straight. Here, what do you need? What do you need? It's cheaper for me to pay you than her.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. All right. Surprisingly, we got a decent little pod today. That's awesome. Friday night pod. Let's do it.
Sounds good.
Cool. You're out.